Well, hello and welcome to ASI Cast number 155. I'm Richard Marks, ASI's Research Director. Now, this last week, there have been some significant announcements from Barb, the UK TV jig, that we know will be of interest to our listeners and viewers. So, Justin Sampson, Chief Executive of Barb, has kindly agreed to talk us through these developments. So, welcome, Justin.
Thank you, Richard. Hello, everyone.
So, Justin, firstly, Barb is rebranded to Barb Audiences, with the Barb being capital B, lowercase ARB. Can you talk us through the reasons for this and what it signifies?
It's a subtle but we think very important change. And actually, many years ago, when I interviewed for the job, I was asked in the interview whether we should change the company name. And I was initially bemused because Barb is synonymous with trusted audience measurement. And I'd always known Barb was a very strong brand in the UK, but I've since found out it also resonates around the world too. Now, what some people might not know is that Barb has long been an acronym, and the first B stands for broadcasters. And at my interview, I said we might need to lose the acronym at some point, and that's what we've done. And you might say, well, why now? And for me, the Netflix announcement in October was the moment to move. And it was actually at the ASI event in Nice that I started sounding out our board members about the name change. And a couple of weeks later, in a board meeting, the decision was agreed in just under 2 minutes, I think it was. So it is with the ongoing support of the broadcasters who've nurtured the Barb brand for over 40 years that we're moving forward with a name that blends our trusted heritage with a forward-looking view that we're relevant to all content producers and distribution platforms. So Barb, the acronym, is no more, but long live Barb. And the word audiences, well, this is what all our users are interested in.
And audiences was within the acronym. So you've taken the most salient word from the acronym and put it after. So it's now Barb, the name. Yeah, that definitely
I
makes
think in
sense.
practice, people will just call us Barb, but the
Yeah.
formal company name of Companies House is Barb Audiences.
Oh, okay. So you've actually re-registered the new name. It's a.
Yeah, we've formally changed the name of the company.
Well, that'll be of interest to those of a more marketing bent in our audience. But to sort of zero in on some of the announcements that have been made around that, the main focus of the announcement was the outcome of the industry consultation, which you obviously referred to back in your presentation in Nice at the conference you referred to. And that was a consultation about the scope of Barb's measurement. What were the highlights of the findings, and what's Barb decided to do as a result?
So, quickly before talking about the highlights, let me just set the scene with the exam question that was in front of us. And that question was, can we establish an industry-wide consensus on how to define the type of content on video sharing platforms that should be part of our industry's standard measurement of what people watch? And as a starting point, we proposed the concept of what we call TV-like content, which reflected principles and language in legal frameworks such as the EU's Audiovisual Media Services Directive. But it also resonated with a seminal speech by Mark Pritchard of Procter & Gamble some years ago, in which he talked about the importance of responsible editorial control over the quality of content, as well as investing in places where brands are proven safe and where the content is known. Now, the actual phrase TV-like content didn't really go down very well, so we've dropped that, and I'll come back to what we're using in a moment. But there is a near universal appreciation of the definition and role of content quality, and inherent to this is the value and values attributed to the investment made in production. And it's not just investment as measured by the production budget. Importance was given to editorial input, editorial oversight, and an intention to deliver in the spirit of regulation was also emphasized. And of course, the content has to be safe and suitable for advertisers. How the content's distributed and on which device it's consumed should not be a determining factor. So, and it should be an audience-centric definition that's agnostic of device, agnostic of platform, as well as embracing all services, regardless of the content producer's or the platform's business model, because audiences don't respect the boundaries that the industry puts around different types of service. So we've established, to the points I've just made, we're describing content that is fit for TV as providing a benchmark of quality, and that the consultation has demonstrated that that has the substantial backing of the industry. And two other important points. One is that we know some advertisers invest in video content that wouldn't meet that definition of being fit for TV. So audience data should also include environments which adhere at a minimum to industry accepted levels of brand safety. And the second other point I'd highlight is that, as well as understanding the nature of content, it's really important to surface contextual measures of quality. So think details about which screen's being used, what's the orientation of the screen, is the sound on or off, how much the content is in view. And many of these things already reported by Barb, and the expectation is that these quality factors are also available in any audience reporting for content on video sharing platforms.
So you when you're reporting, for example, Channel 4 on YouTube, because they've obviously that some of their content is licensed to YouTube, you'll be reporting volume, whether the volume was used?
So currently we capture all viewing to Channel 4's archive content on YouTube on the TV set, and we use audio matching. So the sound has to be on in the same way the sound has to be on for all our other reporting.
And for portable devices?
Our ability to measure viewing of content on devices other than the TV set is one of those things which highlights our reliance on working with not just the companies that produce content, but the platforms that distribute them. So currently we measure, for example, Channel 4 viewing through all four on mobiles and smartphones, because Channel 4 has embedded an SDK which allows us to track viewing on those other devices. So our ability, and this is where we said in the announcement, how and when we will deliver this is still to be clearly defined. But what we can do, it can only be enhanced by the active participation of the content producers and the platform. So for us to get into measuring content on other devices, we would need to work with the platforms.
So obviously, I mean, my take on the announcement was that you will now be, you're on the TV set, you'll be measuring fit for TV content across, potentially across social platforms. As you mentioned, on other devices, that's subject to access to the data. In terms of exactly what you're measuring, so for example, if you're measuring Channel 4 content on YouTube, will you be measuring the advertising related to that from the ad server?
I mean, I think the mandate from the consultation is quite clear, and it echoes findings from a consultation we did a few years ago, which is that the expectation is for audience measurement to deliver not just viewing to the content that viewers are interested in, but the commercial opportunities that advertisers can take advantage of around those bits of content. And it's long been inherent to Barb's reporting of TV here in the UK that it's content and ads. And so we're taking out of the consultation that that's what we should be focusing on and trying to deliver as we extend our reporting across SVOD and video sharing platforms.
And in terms of, let's say, well, I guess there's two related questions I've got to that, just from my understanding. The first is, if I am on, say, YouTube and I watch a episode of Dairy Girls on the Channel 4 YouTube channel, and then I switch to watch a video of Gary Numan on Top of the Pops that someone's uploaded on YouTube, you'll be measuring the former but not the latter, even though the latter is TV content.
Well, the ambition is for us to measure all content that meets the fit for TV criteria. And indeed, and this got maybe lost a little bit in the announcement, we're also committing to try to also measure all content that is at a minimum brand safe. And I mean, I would imagine if there's archive shows being loaded onto YouTube that were fit for TV many years ago, then they probably would fit the criteria of fit for TV now.
Oh, okay. So it could potentially include other users uploading content if it is TV related. I guess that makes sense. The other aspect is around the measurement of the advertising. You mentioned the ambition to measure the advertising related to the content. Obviously, Origin is planning to measure, in theory, all advertising across YouTube, which would include presumably the broadcaster related content. Does that mean we're going to have two measures of advertising where Barb's remit overlaps with the vid model measuring all advertising across social platforms?
Well, I think firstly, I mean, just to make a point of distinction between our remit and Origins. Origins is setting out to meet the cross-media ambitions that are enshrined in the WFA's North Star. We see our superpower, our remit, is delivering the industry standard cross-platform measurement of what people watch. And our advances in measuring audiences to the likes of Netflix, Disney, YouTube, and TikTok mean we have a tremendously rich asset and one that continues to evolve. And we've always been open to how this data can be used in broader cross-media collaborations. Our long-standing collaboration with IPA on Touchpoints is a good example. So we're absolutely open to collaboration with plans in the UK that Origin has to deliver against WFA's North Star objectives.
But it seems like the bottom line is that for fit for TV content, your consultation seems to have reached a consensus that there is a ideal way of measuring that content that takes account of the context, takes account of brand safety, and presumably also you'll be using TV style measurement for the advertising as opposed to perhaps 2 seconds visibility or whatever the minimum criteria are for online video.
Well, clearly any joint industry audience measurement is about delivering like for like metrics. And the point about audience currencies and how they evolve is one that obviously has been something that ASI has focused on for many years. And Barb, like many other joint industry currencies, has always taken the view that it's right to have standard default metrics. And a good example is our sort of 3-minute definition for program and channel reach. That said, we've always taken the view that users can customize the definitions of the point of analysis. And I think a question that we need to resolve is how can this apply in the world of commercial metrics? And I think to your question, Richard, more specifically, how do we reconcile two things? The first is the UK TV industry's long established adherence to duration weighted metrics with minute level reporting. And how can we reconcile that with the MRC standards for cross-platform reporting that prioritize second-level reporting and the measurement of commercial impressions at a 2-second threshold? Now, I can speak with most certainty about Barb's position. The UK, I think, is already one of the most advanced in its granularity of reporting commercial audiences to the minute. And because of developments in audience measurement techniques, it does mean we can consider a move to even greater granularity. And we did look at this a couple of years back, and we agreed then to have another look this year. And the reasons for putting it back a couple of years is that linked to our commissioning of new metering technology from Kantar for the new contract, we couldn't back in 2021 fully assess the implications of moving to second level reporting But we're now in a position where the new metering technology is in a substantial part of our reporting panel. So we can now look at the assessment of what the implications would be if we made a change that would allow some coming together of metrics in a way to be decided. That said, what we also have to recognise, aside from the measurement and reporting challenges, is there's a phenomenal amount of infrastructure in the business that is based on minute level reporting, and to take those and change those to handling a potential move to second level reporting is not something that's going to happen overnight. That's a multi-year project.
I'm still surprised that a number of countries, I think including the US and Canada, still actually report on the average audience to the whole commercial break.
I know some countries, I won't name them, who don't even report the commercial audiences. They just give the commercials the audience that the programme gets.
Now, in terms of what the implications might be, you mentioned cross-media measurement and the Origin Initiative. And there may be a possibility that there are two sets of metrics going on there, you know, one more related to cross-media planning and one more relating to the value of individual media. Because, I mean, at the moment, in theory, if I go on the BBC website, if I read some news reports, that will be measured by UCOM. If I then play a video stream, that will be measured by Barb. And then if I listen to some Radio 5 Live related to the content, that will be measured by Rachel, without me actually having left the same website, which does raise the question of what do you think that the role that single media JICs have going forward in as platforms converge and media conform into this sort of multi-platform, multi-audience landscape?
It's a tricky one. I think I remember some years ago, Richard, you writing about the idea that actually audience measurement should be, and forgive me if I'm slightly misquoting you, but you were talking about we need something to measure what people watch, something to measure what people read, and something to measure what people listen to. Kind of, so rather than defining it by media, you define it by the activity.
Yeah. I did say that.
You did. And I think our the way we define what we do as BAR to be the industry standard cross-platform measurement of what people watch, that's what we... So in a way, we're trying to get one third of what you said, and we've been able to make, I think, very good progress independently of some of the big new services in the market, and some of them have come on board. It's great to have Netflix on board, and we're actively talking to them about going to the next step of working with them on further reporting of their commercials. This is a personal point of view, I think, rather than a BARB point of view. I think that, and I know from my time in radio, I spent a long time in radio, for those of you who don't know, the challenge of measuring how people listen and how people watch are very different. And I know that there's some coming together with digitization and more distribution through the internet, but we have to still bear in mind that there's a lot of viewing and a lot of listening that takes place offline. Mm. So if you're going to have comprehensive measurement of what people watch or what people listen to, then you've got to sort of take into account both the online and offline consumption. And to, I think, devise one overarching audience measurement system that does that really, really well for what people watch and what people listen, that's really challenging. So I think there's probably pragmatically a continuing need for somebody to specialise in what people watch and what somebody else to specialize in, what people listen to, and then you find a way of bringing it together. And Touchpoint, I think, has done a great job of that for many years. Origin in the UK is looking to do that with regard to post-campaign reporting. So that's a more personal view than a BARB view. But
yeah, that's really insightful. If I revisit what I said about, you know, watching, listening, and reading, I guess the origin of that was more to do with the fact that those activities may work in different ways in terms of how you measure them in a way that best reflects how advertising works. You know, I mean, if with your in your old radio days, you would have been talking about low involvement processing and subconscious, yeah, and so on. You know,
yeah,
press, you know, display works in a different way in itself. What I'm struggling with personally is, if you take video, and this may slightly contradict what I, the quote that you made from me, whether online social video works in sufficiently a different way that it is a different medium, and therefore trying to standardize and commoditize exposure-based metrics across television and online social video is trying to combine two things that work in very different ways. And I just wonder whether your sort of talk about TV-like content may be starting to recognize that, you know, we need to actually question the degree to which social video may be a medium and is deserving of its own measurement, but isn't necessarily going to be measured in exactly the same way as TV-like or fit for TV content.
I think the thing that really sang out of our consultation, I mean, there are a lot of advertisers who took part and they're interested in getting through to people, getting through to audiences. And they said, look, audiences don't respect these boundaries that the industry tries to put around things. They think, I want to watch something. What am I going to watch? And clearly an advertiser is interested in the kind of content that people want to watch. And that they want to put their messages alongside the content that's watched by the people they want to target. And so we've taken out of the consultation a very strong view that we need to be audience-centric. We need to be focused on the entertainment content, the information content that people choose to watch, whether it be on a broadcast linear channel, a broadcast, a VOD service, a subscriber, an SVOD service, or an SVOD, AVOD service, or a video sharing platform. And it's kind of trying to be very audience-centric in us measuring how people are watching things that advertisers want to advertise around.
That definitely makes sense. I'm conscious I take out quite a lot of your time already by going deep on some of these questions, and it's great you've been willing to do that. I've just got a couple of quick related questions just from some sort of recent activity. Firstly, you announced the appointment of a head of data science, Khaled Sarafi. What's his remit going to be at Barb?
So it's 5 years now since Barb's been delivering daily audience data that combines the power of panel data and big data. This is the dovetail fusion method that underpins our reporting. And we're fast approaching the point where we need to consider whether integrating BVOD census data is enough. How can we reap the benefits of return path data? Can we incorporate double-blind matching with media owners' first-party data sets? That's one big thing on our agenda. Also, we're getting more involved in CFlight. I think many viewers will know that's a collaboration between the commercial broadcasters that harnesses their first-party data with Barb data to provide total post-campaign validation of reach and frequency across linear and BVOD. And our assessment of CFlight is designed to provide assurance to the industry that the solution meets the standards expected of a joint industry solution. And how does that complement our own advanced campaign hub, which is a pre-campaign planning tool? So having Khaled El Sarafi on the team puts Barb in a great position to develop our established industry leadership position on how data integration can be an effective part of a trusted joint industry solution. So he'll be involved in designing and specifying solutions, working closely with research agencies as we commission to deliver the solutions. And if I'm allowed to say so, Caroline Baxter and I are grateful to Steve Wilcox, who, as part of his ongoing consultancy to Barb, was involved in the recruitment process. And I hope Steve will forgive me for saying that while Khaled is new to the media industry, he's clearly very talented, and we have high hopes that he'll become Barb's very own Steve Wilcox.
Oh, it's quite something to live up to. No pressure. Finally, I guess related to all these the conversations we've been having about the new metering granularity, the widening the purview of Barb, you also announced when we discussed the new Barb contract with you that the Barb panel is expanding to 7,000 homes, and Ipsos, I think, have just been appointed to recruit those additional homes. So what's the timeline for that larger panel going live? When is this larger Barb panel going to be reporting in earnest?
So you rightly point, Richard, to this being part of the new contracts go live in 2024. Just a quick bit of context, as well as committing to going up to 7,000 homes, we've also committed to new metering technology. So the router meter, which we've already installed in the panel, will still be there, but it'll now work alongside Kantar's new People Meter 7, which is a tablet-based meter with an engaging avatar-based registration system for panel members, also under the bonnet, more granular audio matching. And our first task to get ready for the new contract period is convert all the existing panels to these new meters. And this is going really well. I alluded to it earlier. We expect this to be complete by the summer, and we can then push on to expand the panel up to 7,000. So we're expecting to get 7,000 about 13 or 14 months from now. So that's Q2 2024.
Cool. Well, thanks for joining us. I'm sure we'll be
thanks for having, having me.
Further updates as we have done since ASI started 7 or 8 years ago now. But in the meantime, thanks for joining us, and we'll catch up with you soon, Justin.
Thank you, Richard. Bye-bye.